Okay, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. My name is Annika Smid, and I'm Associate Professor and Director of the Center for Cities at Windsor Law at the University of Windsor. I want to acknowledge that I'm coming to you this afternoon from the traditional territory of the Three Fires Confederacy, the Ojibwe, the Odawa, and the Potawatomi people. Thanks to all of you for being here, and especially thanks to all of our candidates for Windsor West for joining us this afternoon. The Center for Cities was established at the University of Windsor at the Faculty of Law in 2019 as a venue for supporting research, teaching, and community engagement on the legal and policy tools of inclusive and sustainable cities. You can learn more about our work on our website, windsorlawcities.ca, and by following us on social media. We're proud to host today's Windsor West and Windsor Tecumseh Candidates Forums on the Vision for Cities, and proud to be doing this for a second time with Rich Garten from CTV. We started this with the federal election campaign last fall and are really pleased to be able to do this again today. So thanks to Rich. I'll just give a quick introduction to Rich and then I'll turn it over to him to introduce our candidates and get us moving for today. Rich Garten is known to many of you as a reporter with CTV Windsor, a position that he's held since 2009. During his time with CTV Windsor, Rich has often covered municipal affairs in the city. A native of Oakville, Ontario, he holds 2 degrees from the University of Windsor. Rich lives in Windsor with his wife and 2 children. Welcome again to Rich. I'll turn the floor to you to introduce our candidates and explain the format of today's forum.
Thanks so much, Annika. And thank you and welcome to those in attendance today. And of course, to the candidates in Windsor West for joining us. I just want to take a brief moment to go over the format of today's forum. The first round will contain 4 questions for candidates drafted by the Center for Cities team, and that will take us approximately 30 minutes. Each candidate will be given the opportunity to respond first to one of the questions. In that order, we selected right before we started here in a draw. They will have 2 minutes, and then the other 2 candidates will be given 1 minute each to respond. Candidates may be given 30 seconds to rebut after everyone has spoken at my discretion. I would just ask candidates to use the hand raise button if you'd like to rebut, and then I can call upon you in the order that you raised your hand. Following the first round, we will take questions from you, the audience. You are invited to use the Q&A function to submit your questions. Please keep in mind that questions should relate to the topic of this forum, which is the priorities for the City of Windsor, and or provincial issues with the municipal impact. Questions will be selected according to their relevance and the extent to which they ask something the candidates have not already been asked. We anticipate having about 15 minutes for audience questions. Candidates will alternate in the order they're asked to respond to the question. However, if a question has been directed to a specific candidate, they will normally be given the opportunity to respond first. Questions which can be posed to all candidates will be prioritized. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to the audience question with rebuttal, again, at my discretion. Following those rounds of questions, the candidates will be given 1 minute each to give a closing statement. The candidate who answered the first question last will speak first, and we will work backwards alphabetically from there. In addition to a live audience today, the forum is being recorded and will be available on the Windsor Law Center for Cities website and YouTube channel later on today. It will also be released as a podcast by our friends at Rose City Politics, so many thanks to them. Finally, before we jump into the questions, I'd like to thank everyone for their patience. Holding a candidate forum by Zoom presents some different challenges than a live event, although by now I think most of us have pretty much got the hang of this Zoom thing. But thank you for your patience, just in case we run into any hiccups along the way. Candidates are encouraged to leave their screen view on gallery so they can see me at all times, and I will give this visual cue when your time is almost up. We reserve the right to mute microphones if time limits are not being respected. A reminder to the candidates that in this online space, talking over each other can be highly distracting. So please do allow other candidates to finish speaking before you jump in. Okay, thank you to all. And I think we're ready to get started. A quick rundown of our candidates today for Windsor West. With the Green Party of Ontario, we have Krista Glavaski-Ridsdale. Krista, welcome. Running for the Liberal Party of Ontario, we have Linda McCurdy. And for the Ontario NDP and the incumbent in this riding, we have Lisa Gretzky. Thank you, candidates, for making the time to be with us today. And according to the draw, the first question will go to Lisa Gretzky. So, Lisa, the first question. Windsor has long been a car-reliant community. Yet, for numerous reasons, many Windsorites need or prefer to have other transportation options. The lack of a reliable and comprehensive transit system remains a barrier for many Windsorites to access employment, educational, and other opportunities. As the cost of gas continues to rise, with one of the highest unemployment rates in the province, and with the climate crisis more and more acute, the need becomes even more pressing. The question is, how do you envision the provincial government's role as a partner to improving public and active transit in Windsor and the region? Lisa, you have 2 minutes. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Rich. I think the key to building on our transit system is for the province to be paying their fair share, supporting the municipalities. So what we know is that through cuts through Harris Conservative government, lack of investment or backpedaling and those cuts through Liberal government and providing the funding to municipalities. And now again, through another Conservative government that has continued to cut the funding to municipalities for transit, what we are seeing is a system that isn't always reliable for the people that want to access it or need to access it. So we have a commitment as New Democrats that we would go back to the model of uploading 50% of the cost to the province. So that would be us partnering with the municipalities to take on some of that cost that will help build on the routes. So we know that oftentimes the routes are unreliable. We know that the timing of the buses are unreliable. That is certainly not on the staff, the workers that are driving the buses. It is purely lack of resources. So we will partner with the municipalities. We have that commitment to partner with the municipalities to make the investments necessary to build the routes that people need in order to get to and from wherever it is they're going in a timely manner, for the municipalities to be able to maintain their stock of buses and other transit. It's really key that the province is a partner with the municipalities as opposed to what we've seen over the last 20 years or more, where the municipality has further downloaded those expenses and that responsibility onto the province. And I just want to point out that when the pandemic first hit and we were losing bus services here in Windsor, I was one of the first and the only elected official that stood up and said that that was unacceptable and that the province had to help the municipality keep those buses running, because we know that it's low-income people and seniors and people with disabilities that were most disproportionately impacted.
Okay, Lisa, thank you very much. Next up, we have Krista with the Green Party of Ontario. Krista, go ahead, unmute your microphone.
Okay, so I agree with Lisa that during the pandemic, it's really brought the lack of affordable and accessible and convenient transit in Windsor to a head. Some of us have known this since even before the last election in 2018, when we were saying that we're building factories out in Oldcastle and on Patillo Road, but we can't get our workforce there. We say we don't have workers. We do have workers. We just need to be able to get them where they need to go to work. So one of the things in the platform from the Green Party, fully costed by the way, is to restore the 50% provincial cost share for transit operations in order to reduce the fare increases for users. Another thing that would happen immediately is immediately lower the cost of current fares for a period of time to offset the cost of gasoline, because we're all feeling that crunch. We're looking or projecting to triple the number of dedicated bus lanes by 2025. And this is important. Ensure that all transportation decisions are evidence-based without political interference and include consultation and planning with experts throughout the planning process. It also needs to be collaborative with the people who use the transit in those communities. We're also okay. Obviously.
Oh. Can I cut you off there? We've yep. gone over, but if you'd like to say more, you can always have a chance to rebut as well. Linda, I'm going to go over to you, and you have 1 minute for your comments. Go ahead.
Thank you. A strengthened transit network benefits drivers and commuters alike. By getting more cars off the road and getting more people moving, we improve the quality of transportation. As you know, the Liberal government is pledging to reduce all fares to $1. This will help getting more people off the roads. Obviously, if we lower the cost of transportation as far as buses are concerned, we need to improve the system. And the Liberal government will work with the municipality to make sure there's funding to make those improvements so that more people are using the transit system and less people are on the roads. And that will also improve the environment and it will improve the public transportation needs to be one that people can count on, and the Liberal government is committed to the funding. We'll put the political games by maintaining all existing funding transit plans in place.
Okay, Linda, thank you. I just want to take a moment to just remind the candidates, if you would like to rebut something, put your hand up in, like, using the raised hand function through Zoom, because if I'm looking down, I might not see it, but if the little hand pops up on your screen, then I'll be able to see it. Krista, I want to give you the first chance to respond, because I know I cut you off earlier. So you have 30 seconds in your rebuttal. You can go ahead now, and then Lisa, you can go after that. Krista, the floor is yours for 30 seconds.
Okay, I just want to say that one of the pillars of the Green Vision is something called connected communities. So the goal would be that you can get most anywhere you need to go within 15 minutes from your own front door. It also means connecting those communities with other communities. So you can go from one place to the other, to work, to school, wherever you need to go, using the best transit method that you want to use. It doesn't mean never ever having a car, but it means reserving car use for those trips where it's actually warranted and where it's needed, rather than just because we have to do it.
Okay, thank you, Krista. Lisa, you have 30 seconds to respond as well.
Thank you. So what the Liberals plan is for a short-term fare decrease. It's a buck a ride, just like the Conservatives brought in buck a beer, and we saw what happened with that. The Liberal leader, Stephen Del Duca, was in cabinet and was the Minister of Transportation as municipalities were being starved for funding to be able to provide reliable and affordable transportation. So what we need is a government such as a New Democrat government who will partner with the municipalities, provide them the funding that they need for long-term fare decreases and to help increase ridership and build on the routes.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Linda, I don't see your... Okay, you go ahead. You have 30 seconds.
I think it's irresponsible to compare buck a ride with buck a beer, where buck a beer was something that was providing alcohol to people in communities that may not benefit from that. Buck a ride is something to get people motivated to use the transportation system. And that's why we're proposing that. And whether it's short term or not, we'll see once we are in government.
Okay. I'm going to end that discussion there and move on to the next question. But first, I should have noted this earlier. The progressive conservative candidate, John Leontowitz, was invited to attend today's debate, and organizers did not receive a response. So on to the second question. Chris, you have the floor first. Lisa, if I could just ask you to drop your hand raise button. So Krista, this question goes to you first. Mental health and addictions are described as having reached epidemic proportions. What should the province be providing to municipalities to address these crises in communities across Ontario, including right here in Windsor? You have 2 minutes.
Well, first of all, the Green Party believes that mental health care is health care. So we call for expanding services for health care under OHIP. We also care for increasing funding to supply and to be able to provide healthcare and or mental health care and addiction services right to the communities that need them. One of the things, I'm going to say it, and I know it's controversial, but we feel that by decriminalizing the personal use of drugs, we can take the money that is being spent to imprison these people and arrest them, which has not shown to lower the problem or change it in any way at all, and actually take that money and put it where it can be used in healthcare, in treatment and addiction services. That would mean that money, because we believe it should be delivered in the community where it's needed, that money goes to the municipalities to be able to create those services. We're talking about nurse-led clinics. We're talking about increasing community access to these things, reducing the wait times for example, children needing healthcare or mental health care services to 30 days or less. One of the other things is we recognize that all of these things are connected. So when I talk about mental health, when we say we want to double the ODSP rate, part of the reason for that is helping people manage their mental health. Housing instability and food insecurity are not good for mental health. And if you don't have to worry about who's paying your rent or whether there's food on the table, you can better take care of yourself and access the services that you need. One of the other things is no more caps on consumption sites. Consumption sites have proven to, harm reduction has proven to be very valuable in fighting this drug poisoning crisis. And that also means funding to get them into the neighborhoods and communities where they belong.
Okay, Krista, thank you very much. And the next response goes to Linda. Linda, go ahead, you have 1 minute.
There are a lot of new pressures on people's mental health. The pandemic, a global conflict, social media, climate change. People, and especially our kids and younger Ontarians, are feeling more stressed and anxious and depressed. We need to make sure that the province is assisting the municipality in helping to take care of these issues. Being a criminal lawyer, I see too many situations where people require mental health and particularly opioid addiction care that is not available. We need to make sure that the people who need mental health and addiction care are getting it locally and don't have to be shipped out. For example, for opioid addiction treatment, it's not available in Windsor.
Okay, Linda, thank you. Lisa, you have 1 minute to respond as well.
So I was the first politician to come out in support of safe consumption sites here in the city and help push that forward. I was also the first one to say that our police services should all be carrying naloxone kits, which was controversial at the time. But what I'll say is this from experience, the services here are disconnected. We're seeing it across the province, and that is from lack of funding from the province. We need publicly funded, publicly delivered services that are connected, rather than having to people waiting months to be referred to another agency for support. We need to ensure that children in our community are not waiting a year or more for services, and we're committed to cutting that down to 30 days. The other thing that we need to do is ensure that people that are struggling with mental health or addictions have safe, stable, supportive housing, and that is also something that we have committed to for years, even before I was an MPP. You have to have all of those pieces in place to ensure that when people do seek help, that they are successful in their recovery.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Linda, I feel like you have something that you want to add to this. So you have 30 seconds to offer a response as well.
I agree with Ms. Gretzky. There is a major gap between mental health and finding it. We will reverse Ford's conservative deep cuts to mental health care and connect more people to mental health support by investing $3 billion over 4 years in mental health and addiction services. We'll expand coverage and reduce wait times for OHIP, mental health care for those who need it, particularly our youth.
Okay, thank you very much, candidates. I'm now going to move on to the next question. And this is a big one, it's about housing. Windsor, like most of the province's cities, is experiencing a housing affordability crisis. I don't need to tell you that. We hear calls for higher levels of government to support municipalities to build more and faster. Others are concerned about the environmental impacts of continued sprawl, the financial impacts on municipalities of shouldering the cost of new roads and sewers to support new builds, and the growing inability of many Ontarians, including Windsorites, to get on the housing ladder. So, in your opinion, what should the provincial government be doing to support municipalities in responding responsibly to the housing crisis? Linda, you have the first crack at this one, and you have 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Local communities know best when it comes to where and how to build more homes. So we'll make sure that they have the resources they need to improve housing as quickly and responsibly as possible. We know that residents in their municipal governments have the best firsthand knowledge on how to tackle housing crisis, so we will empower them. We will also give them incentives to improve more housing quickly and responsibly by providing up to $300 million in new funding over 5 years. We'll update Ontario's growth planning framework to recognize that building homes for all current and future Ontarians is a fundamental obligation of local governments. We'll work quickly in close collaborations with municipal partners to end exclusionary zoning and allow homes with up to 3 units and 2 stories to be built as of right in residential areas across the province. We'll encourage the development of low-rise, missing middle multiplexes and other mid-rise housing options near rapid transit stations and routes through neighborhood transit zoning. We'll work with the municipalities to unlock more land homes by expanding the Brownfields Tax Incentive Program to provide up to 10 years of property tax relief on all underutilized commercial space like strip malls and convert them into homes. will also allow interested municipalities to permit street voting, which lets streets of residents and voters and renters vote to increase maximum housing allowances. We will work to establish housing as a fundamental right in Ontario and provide people with safe and reliable shelter, as well as a robust wraparound services they need to live with dignity and stability. And we will provide municipality and housing support providers with $100 million per year to promote a housing first approach to ending chronic homelessness that will quickly move people independent into independent permanent housing with comprehensive supports.
Okay, Linda, thank you very much. Lisa, the floor is yours. You have 1 minute. Uh-oh. I see an image of Lisa. Oh, and she's back. Okay.
Technical difficulties.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Rich. One of the big issues that we're seeing in our community and across the province, and I will mention that 7 years ago in the legislature, I mentioned this, and the government of the day laughed at me saying it's not a problem here in Windsor, that we have lots of affordable housing, is speculators and investors coming in from other jurisdictions, other countries, buying up our single family homes and our multi-unit dwellings and turning them into rental units. And in between tenants, after they've done that, they raise the rates, the rental rates. And so we are committed to introducing a speculation tax and a vacancy tax to those investors that are simply buying up homes for the sake of padding their own bank accounts. So it's not just about building homes that needs to happen, but we need to make sure that provincially there is legislation in place and there are tools for the municipalities as well to be able to actually enforce the bad actors, as people like to call them, that are driving up the cost of housing in our province. And we've also committed to helping first-time home buyers. We have a plan that will provide 10% of a down payment for people looking to get into the housing market to be able to purchase their first-time home.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Krista, you have the floor and you have 1 minute to respond.
Okay, so obviously we would seek to build more and protect the existing affordable and supportive housing supply that we have now. With wraparound supports. But more importantly in this area, I think, we have to end speculation buying, just as Lisa said, but we plan to create more pathways to home ownership. For example, ending blind bidding to make sure that the purchase process is transparent, making home inspections mandatory, consult on and develop a down payment support program, develop and support alternative home ownership pilot programs like tiny homes and rent to own, provide security and support for renters. That's very important. So reinstating rent controls and implement vacancy control, establish a clear system for what type of renovations are allowed. So we won't have any more rent evictions. A lot of supports other than social housing.
Okay, Krista, thank you. In terms of hands, Lisa, I saw yours go up first. Just a reminder, you have 30 seconds for your rebuttal. Linda, I see you have your hand up too, so you'll have a chance after Lisa. Go ahead, Lisa.
Something that we often don't talk about enough, I mean, I talk about it frequently, but government does not focus on, and certainly not this conservative government, is supportive housing for individuals with intellectual or developmental disabilities. The wait list under the previous Liberal government was well over 20 years long for someone to get supportive housing. Under this conservative government, that has doubled in the 4 years that they have been government. And so that's something else that we are committed to investing in, is ensuring that people have people with intellectual or developmental disabilities have those smaller community-based homes that are supportive for them, and that they have the frontline workers that they need to be able to provide that support.
Thank you, Lisa. Linda, go ahead.
Yes, it's interesting that Lisa raised that issue, because I actually spoke to a voter who has a wide age range of intellectual disabled children who she is looking to have at some point live independently. She actually told me that when the previous Liberal government was in, she had everything that she needed for her child. And now the wait list is 25 years. So you actually have to put your child on a wait list when they're born if they're going to be living independently when they are 25 years old. Otherwise, I agree with the submissions that Ms. Gretzky has made, because the NDP has changed their housing plan a number of times to mirror the Liberal plan exactly.
Okay, Krista, did you want a chance to add anything or are you good?
Well, I do. Basically, I want to say I actually work for a social housing provider, and there has been a deficit in capital spending for at least the last 14 years through more than one government, because we forgot that after we build something, we have to take care of it and maintain it. And it kind of rankles me that we're always talking about adding, but we're never talking about how are we going to pay for it going forward? Because did you know that some of the new funding coming for capital investments mean we're not allowed to fix the things that are broken, but we are allowed to build new things. So I can't replace the 10,000 toilets that need to be replaced, but I can, install new bathroom cabinets that aren't needed by anybody. And I've never seen anybody who's been in power yet actually speak to that. Don't just promise me funding and then tell me I have to spend it in this tiny little thing. Give me the funding and let me use it for the capital and maintenance projects that are needed today.
Okay, Krista, thank you. I think that's a good place to leave that. But we can always come back to this subject if there's something interesting in the Q&A. And I just want to remind everybody who's watching that the Q&A is open and you are encouraged to put questions in there, because our fourth and final question in the first round is now upon us. And after that, we will go directly to Q&A. So please ask away so we can get the questions that matter to you to these candidates. And so the fourth question, cities are faced with addressing some of the biggest challenges of our time: climate, widening inequality, the pandemic, housing unaffordability. Yet some consider that municipalities are in a state of crisis, lacking both the political power and stable funding to truly lead on these issues. So I'd like to know, Lisa, to you, you have the first chance at this one. Do you feel that municipalities need more power? And if so, what would that look like if your party was elected? You have 2 minutes.
So I think what needs to happen is that the municipalities need to have a partner at the provincial table. And that is not the case. That is currently not the case, not under the Conservatives. They need a government that is going to listen to their individual needs, because not every municipality has the same exact same concerns. To compare our needs here to those in the north, it is not a fair comparison. And yet what we find is often provincial government takes that approach. We need a government that recognizes that our municipalities are also elected officials who are oftentimes even more closely connected to the community they serve than at other levels of government. And so they need to respect that. And what we've seen with the previous Liberal government under Doug Ford, and it's unfortunate that the Conservative member isn't here to defend this record, is a government that overrides the elected rights of the municipalities and those elected we saw in Toronto how they cut the city council in half during an election and have used extraordinary powers of a province to override municipal government. So really what needs to happen is to have, and I cannot say this strongly enough, a provincial government that will actually partner with the municipalities to listen to the needs of the municipality and provide the funding and support that the municipalities need at each individual municipality puts forward.
Okay, Lisa, thank you. Next up, we have Krista. And Krista, you can have 2 minutes to respond to this one, okay?
Okay. An important thing would be support and strengthen the municipal governments. I'm not proposing giving them carte blanche. However, provincially fund 50% of shelter and community housing costs while allowing municipalities to maintain management control. That would allow them to make the decisions within their communities about what type of housing is needed and where their money needs to go. Creating a dedicated $2 billion per year climate adaptation fund for municipalities to give them the ability to actually make those retrofits and make those changes that would really help them move towards climate control. democratic reform, for example, allowing municipalities the option to use the ranked ballot system, create limits for municipal elections so no person may contribute more than $1,000. So we don't have, you know, land speculators and whatever making these huge contributions and swaying the decisions made by the municipality, possibly. Restore auditor general oversight of government advertising. We need to give power back to the municipalities, but we also need to be able to track that they are hitting the targets and that they are actually following the plans that they are putting forward. We have a green building plan, for example, in Windsor, but unfortunately, they're making a lot of decisions that don't follow the plan that they've put forward themselves. We need a little more oversight for that. So we need more reporting back. We need somebody to check to make sure these things are being done properly as well.
Okay, Krista, thank you very much. And Linda, you have the floor and you have 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Municipal governments are elected officials who are, generally speaking, more in touch with the needs of their constituents than the provincial government would be. The Ford government damaged the relationships between the provincial government and municipalities. As Ms. Gretzky mentioned, what they did with respect to the Toronto City Council, overstepping their bounds with that to create a more stable community for their own needs. With respect to the municipal governments, there should be a relationship of assistance between the provincial government and the municipal government, because the municipal governments depend on the provincial governments to determine what they can and can't do from the first instance. And the Liberal government will commit to working with the municipalities to ensure that they have what they need. For Windsor, for example, the East Euro Expressway, they will upload that back to the province to take away that responsibility from the city as far as the tax base is concerned and paying for it. The infrastructure of cities is expensive, and those types of things can be handled by the province, and they can assist the municipalities in that, as opposed to giving the municipalities more power. We can equalize the responsibilities, giving the cities more the option to consider other types of voting, such as ranked ballots, is something that the provincial government should do. So the city can determine on their own how to go about electing their own officials. So the Liberal government will be committed to reforming partnerships with municipalities, as opposed to overstepping and trying to dictate how municipalities should deal with their own issues.
Okay. I see no hands raised, so we will move on from that, and we will slide right into our audience Q&A. We have a few questions in there, so I'll start plucking from the audience Q&A. And first up, we have a question from Brown Wood, and she is asking a question of all candidates, and the question is, will any of the candidates be willing to consult with grassroots citizen groups who are advocating for better transit in Windsor? Based on the ordering, I have Linda going first on this one, and you have 1 minute to respond. Linda, go ahead.
Sure. The way that the Liberal government created its entire platform for this election was by consulting with grassroots groups in every aspect of the plan. They did the open mic plan. They listened to the community. They had Zoom meetings, of course, because we were during a time when we couldn't have people together. So, of course, meeting with any organization that's committed to trying to improve the transit is something that I would be willing to do, because that's exactly how the Liberal Party of the province created its plan. It's a well thought out, well consulted plan, and that's how we propose to do everything with respect to this government.
Okay, Linda, thank you. Lisa, you have the floor and you have 1 minute.
Thank you. So the answer to that question is yes. I actually have a proven track record on working on many topics, not just transit, with the grassroots, with the community members. I've tabled legislation on other topics that was created here from issues here in Windsor. When we were looking at during the worst of the pandemic, and we were seeing that the buses here were going to be shut down and people would not have access, it was myself and people within the community that stood up together and pushed back for the province to support the municipality in order to have those buses running. We pointed out how it disproportionately impacted seniors and individuals with disabilities. And many of our frontline workers require public transit to get to and from work. So the resounding answer to that, based on my history and my past, is yes, we would work with grassroots.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. And Krista, you have 1 minute, go ahead.
Well, the Green Party of Ontario is actually considered a grassroots movement, and that is how we get things done. We have our hands in a lot of pots. I've had people say, well, are you reaching out to this organization in Windsor and that organization in Windsor and this group in Windsor? And I often smile and say, I'm already a member, or I already know all the people in that group and they're connected to this other group. I have connections in food in poverty. I have connections in food security. I have connections in gardening. I have connections in active transportation. I don't need to knock on doors to ask people what's going on in their community, because I know I'm already in there and I already know things that are going on. Would we work with grassroots organizations? Of course we would, because you represent the community, and that's exactly what we want to do. We want to represent the community. We're grassroots just like you.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't see any hands up, so we can move on to our next question in the Q&A. And this one comes from, let me just be sure who I'm attributing this one to. Okay, this one comes from Caroline Taylor, and we've just added a little bit to help frame it into context. So she says, May 20th is National Bike to Work Day, a wonderful venture. With Windsor Regional Hospital employing close to 5,000 workers and planning to move their institution to an area 3 kilometers past Windsor's airport, what is the expectation workers will ride to this new location? More broadly, if your party forms government, how will you work to ensure that land use regulation and funding for active transportation infrastructure go hand in hand to help make cycling a more viable form of transportation? And this one will go to Lisa first. Lisa, you have to unmute your microphone.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm working off an iPad, so sometimes it takes a while to get to the button here. Yeah, so I think, again, that goes back to the province partnering with the municipality to be able to support them in putting the infrastructure in place to allow for active transportation, whether that is cycling or whether, you know, we see bird scooters all over the place. It's fantastic to see so many people using different modes of transportation. So I think the answer to that, again, is that we need someone at the provincial table, and that's a commitment that we have made as New Democrats, is to working with the municipalities to provide the funding and the supports in order to encourage active transportation, but also to be able to build on the infrastructure needed. And I just want to say, just because it was worked in there, talking about workers and healthcare was mentioned, one of the commitments that we've also made is to immediately repealing Bill 124, which directly attacks our frontline healthcare workers. Because we can talk about infrastructure and the need for infrastructure, which we do, healthcare infrastructure, something we fully support. But if we are not respecting and paying our frontline healthcare workers appropriately, and we don't have those workers in the hospitals and community agencies, then those things are just buildings.
Ooh, got myself on mute. Thank you, Lisa. Krista, over to you. You have 1 minute to respond.
Okay, so first of all, I definitely want to say that there are already some guidelines in place trickling down from the province to municipalities about adding or considering active transportation in any new builds and any new improvements. What I'm finding is there is no enforcement. So even though we've made a promise that we are going to include active transportation methods, bike lanes, that sort of thing in all of our new infrastructure builds, that's not happening. Look at the changes that were made to Ouellette Avenue. There was a perfect opportunity to allow for bike lanes and other things there, and it definitely did not happen. Why? And why didn't somebody from the province come down and say, we have a commitment to do this and it needs to be done? So I believe that the province should make it clear that these targets must be met and they must be proven. So if you say that there has to be, you know, a percentage of target in any new neighborhood for affordable housing, prove to me that it's there. If there has to be addition of bike lanes to all new builds and all new capital projects, prove to me that it's there. Show me that it's in the plan before it can be approved.
Okay, Krista, thank you. Linda, I believe you are up next and you have 1 minute.
Thank you. The Liberal government has committed to making it more affordable to bike and walk and drive, providing a $500 rebate for e-bikes, expanding cycling lanes and trails, and making it easier to find and park bikes. Of course, when you start talking about having to bike way across the city, then obviously we'll have to work with the municipality to improve bus, the transit, the routes. The routes are going to have to be updated, obviously, to accommodate commute by bike to the new hospital. And of course, I agree with Ms. Gretzky again, we are committed to repealing Bill 124 so that we can attract more nurses and hospital staff who are willing to live and work here and consider biking to the new facility.
Okay, thank you, Linda. Lisa, you have your hand up and so do you, Krista. Lisa, we'll go to you first and you have 30 seconds to respond. Go ahead.
Thank you. I think the other piece of the puzzle when we're talking about active transportation, specifically around cycling, is making sure that not only is there the investment and the ability for people to cycle in the city, but also to ensure that there are laws in place to make it very clear that when a motorist is not being careful and a cyclist is harmed, like Doring happens a lot in Toronto. If you look at their infrastructure where they do have a lot of dedicated bike lanes, it still happens where there's a thing called Doring and someone opens their driver's door and hits a cyclist and hurts them or turns a corner without looking and injures a cyclist. So we need to ensure that there's also very strong laws and enforcement around the responsibility of drivers and hold them accountable when a cyclist does get hurt if the driver is at fault.
Okay, Lisa, thank you. Krista, you also have 30 seconds to rebut.
Okay, so first of all, not only does the Green Party want to repeal Bill 124, we also want to repeal problematic sections of Bill 106. We have a commitment to Vision Zero, so that speaks to Lisa's comments about the safe driving. I want to iterate something about the location, the proposed location of the mega hospital. Because of the location of the airport, you are very limited on north-south routes. No matter what we do, it's going to be very difficult to provide safe and convenient routes to get there, no matter what. We can put as many bike lanes on County Road 42 as we want. If you can't connect to County Road 42, and if you only have two connection points, how are you going to ride? And if there's an airport, we can't change that. We can't put a bridge over an airport. So just keep that in mind. Did they actually think about the community when they decided on that location? They basically said, pick the red one. And that's what they did.
I'm not seeing any other hands up. So I will move on to the next question, but thank you everybody for the debate on that one. Going to the Q&A, we have from anonymous attendee, question to all candidates. Would you support provincial and federal legislation granting power to municipalities to decide certain local affairs without the oversight of the province or the federal government? Krista, you're on mute, but I feel like you want me to re-ask.
No, you don't need to re-ask the question. I think it would actually depend on, I don't want to say just yes, but I think it would depend on what it is. You don't want a municipality. For example, I can personally see for in the Toronto area to have a municipal mayor who would make a decision, probably not, you know, not best if they aren't making a decision that's based on the interest of the community and is on an interest of, you know, their personal partners or things like that. We definitely don't want that to happen. I do believe that sometimes funding wise, if the province or the federal government gives a municipality funding, let's say to improve healthcare, they should allow that community to assess their current system and decide where that money needs to go to be able to properly provide whatever it is for their own municipality. So in that type of control, yes, I believe that would be possible.
Okay, thank you, Krista. Linda. You have the floor now, and you have 1 minute to respond.
I agree that it would depend certainly on the type of issue we're talking about. There's some areas where the jurisdictional issues would predicate the province to deal with those on a general overall provincial basis for the benefit of the entire province. For example, if they're making decisions in the municipality with respect to green spaces or lands that are protected by the province, we can't just give them control on those types of issues because the considerations are for the greater Ontario. And so I would agree that in some cases, control can be given to the municipalities for issues that they are more apt to know from their own constituencies and that are exclusive to the municipality. But generally speaking, it would be determinate upon what type of issues we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, you have 1 minute.
Yeah, so I would say it would depend on the situation. I think that what we have seen in different areas at all levels of government is what happens when any level of government is left without certain checks and balances. So I think there is an opportunity for municipalities to have some freedom to be able to make decisions without the province being able to overstep or override them, or the federal government for that matter. But again, I think it would depend on what the particular issue was, and more importantly, what the community as a whole is saying. I think it's always important that we as elected officials at any level of government are really taking into consideration what the people in our communities are saying about a particular issue. And if necessary, that there needs to be that extra check and balance at different levels of government to ensure that that other level of government are not completely overriding what the community is saying.
Okay. I see no hands up, so I'm going to move on to the next question. And there are no more questions right now in the Q&A. And so we've got one that we came up with beforehand. And so I'm going to give you all a chance to respond to that one now. Linda, you're going to start on this one. Identity politics and the politics of division often seem to be the name of the game at the moment. Islamophobia and anti-Black racism, among other forms of hate, are seen as being at crisis levels, and hate crimes are on the rise in Ontario cities. What will your government do to address that? Linda, go ahead. You have 1 minute.
Well, certainly, I have a unique perspective with respect to anti-Black racism, and our government would commit to ensuring that these are treated with the seriousness that they deserve to be treated with. There does seem to have been a rise in Islamophobia and anti-Black racism. This is something that actually motivated me to get involved in politics. We see what's going on in our neighbors, and it kind of bleeds across the border. And then we have situations where people think that all of a sudden they can say and do whatever they want, which involves hate crimes, hate speech. And this is not the kind of community that we want to have in Ontario. And so the Liberal government would be committed to creating policies and plans that ensure that people are not going to feel that they are empowered to discriminate. That includes teaching Black history in school. That includes a program to teach Indigenous studies in school. It includes programs to teach about all of the people that are here, because one of the things that keeps Islamophobia, discrimination, anti-Black racism down is educating people on where you find it and how to get rid of it. I've been involved in a number of consulting businesses that are dealing with going out into the community and explaining to people what it really is, because to a certain extent, people don't recognize when it's going on. So first of all, education. Second of all, ensuring that it's taken seriously in the community.
Linda, thank you. Lisa, go ahead. You have 1 minute.
So I think one of the first steps is that the elected representatives in the area at all levels of government very quickly and very clearly denounce any type of hate, whether that is anti-Black racism or Islamophobia. That needs to happen. The leaders in the community have to come out very strongly and denounce that. But what we need to see at the provincial government level is not a government who just says that they're doing what's needed to tackle hate and division in our community and communities across the province, but to actually walk the walk. And the conservative government, this conservative government, the Ford conservatives, actually did away with the anti-racism directorate. And that is something that we are committed to bringing back in. And my colleagues and I introduced the Our London Family Act, which directly relates to Islamophobia in our communities as a result of the attack that we saw on the families in London, the family that was killed. So we need to not only talk the talk, but we actually need to walk the walk, and we need strong provincial legislation that empowers municipalities to be able to act and enforce as well.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Krista, you're up.
Okay, so the Green Party has always sought to fight and eradicate systemic racism, because that's where it starts. So fully fund the anti-racism directorate, reversing the recent cuts. Pass the Our London Family Act to change the way we address Islamophobia in Ontario. Address the overrepresentation of Black children in provincial care by the development of frameworks to provide culturally appropriate services to Black children, youth, and families. Identify and address existing standards and structures that continue to harm Black families. And this is important, provide annual reports on the number and proportion of Black and Indigenous children who are in care, and establish an independent office to investigate claims of unfair treatment by caseworkers. Prioritizing gender equality. Require anti-racism and anti-oppression training for all public sector employees. This has been in our wheelhouse for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Linda, I see you want to respond to that.
I don't even want to debate it. I want to agree. I have been, because of my job as a criminal lawyer, I have also done some child protection. We have a disproportionate amount of Black children in care. We have a disproportionate amount of Indigenous children in care. And it's such a big issue. And I can tell you, at the end of the day, we can have strong provincial legislation, but what we need is representation. We need people in the legislature who are experiencing these things so that they can explain to the people who are making the laws that it actually exists. Systemic racism exists. It has since I was born. When I go into the legislature, I certainly can bring a voice to what's going on with respect to systemic discrimination and all of the issues that deal with Black children and Indigenous children from a personal perspective. Because one of the things that we have to do is teach people where these things are, and they're actually everywhere. Representation matters, and that representation, obviously, in this situation, in this topic, is me.
Okay, Linda, I see Lisa really wants to respond to that.
Yeah, so again, I would agree that representation matters. And that is why I am thrilled to be part of a party who had the first ever Black caucus in the history of the Ontario legislature. I'm thrilled that we have three Indigenous people, Salmamaqua, First Nations, the first ever First Nations people elected to the Ontario legislature. And I can tell you that the representation that they have provided and the insight that they have brought and the education to our caucus has been invaluable. And I think that we do need to see more of that. I think we need to see more parties that are willing to listen to all of the voices around the table. And that has not historically happened. It certainly is not happening with the Ford conservative government. It's really important that we not just, again, as I said, talk the talk, but we actually walk the walk.
Okay, Krista, I see you want to jump back in on this one.
I just wanted to raise the issue of another type of inequality is for people living with a disability, improving the accessibility of public buildings. And the Green Party, we believe in, you know, supporting people to retrofit public buildings and to change the building code so that all new buildings being built are going to have to follow that. I'm a person with a non-visible disability, and it surprises me sometimes because people don't think that I have a disability, I don't see how people are treated. And I definitely, that's a very important part of this as well. We believe in an equitable Ontario, and it encompasses so many different things: disabilities, gender, gender identity. We have to recognize that these things need to be changed.
Okay. Linda, I see you have your hand up again. This is a good conversation. And so I'm going to go back to you, but I'd like you to please keep it incredibly brief.
Really brief. You cannot have equity without inclusion. It's not good enough to say we have a few people who have this perspective. We need to make sure that there's equity in that perspective.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's a good spot to close the conversation on that one. We're going to do a very quick lightning round before we move to closing arguments. And this one, we did this in the last debate for Windsor-Tecumseh and it worked out well. I think I'm going to give you 30 seconds each for this one. And the question will go to Linda first. So Linda, what haven't we asked you about that your party would do to provide needed provincial support for cities in the issues that they are responsible for? You have 30 seconds. And you need to unmute.
I haven't been asked about what we will do with respect to healthcare, aside from making sure that the healthcare professionals are paid adequately. We're building a hospital all the way out on Highway 42. And one of the things that I'm committed to when elected is to ensure that we have 24-hour emergency care in the core. And that's going to take an agreement between the city and the province, obviously, for that kind of funding. But in order to have accessible healthcare, it is going to be very important to maintain healthcare in the core that people can get to on an emergency basis. Was that your finger going around? Okay. I'm
yeah. Lisa, you're up. Lightning round.
So yes, healthcare is a big discussion. 24-hour emergency care downtown is something that I've been committed to since the day that I was elected. But I think something, and Krista touched on this, that we do not talk enough about, and it's something near and dear to my heart, are people with disabilities. The fact that through successive Liberal and Conservative governments, they have gotten pushed further and further into poverty. And so we have made commitments to raise the rates for people on ODSP and OW. And I can tell you that one of the most insulting things that I've ever heard, and I'm hearing it from people with disabilities, is the Conservative government repeatedly saying the best social program is a job, not recognizing that there are many thousands of people in our community with disabilities who are not able to work, and we should not be leaving them behind.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Krista, over to you, 30 seconds, lightning round, go.
Okay, so the hospital location has already been mentioned. The disabilities has already been mentioned. I want to bring up flooding and climate change because we forget every time it stops raining, we completely forget about it. And this is a big deal. Nothing has been done. Nothing has been done. So the next rainfall, we're going to flood again. Big deal. We need to reinstate the ministries that oversee these environmental concerns, the people who do the studies and tell us how to build properly and tell us what we can pave and what we can't pave and what we need to protect and what we don't protect. We have to reinstate these immediately.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone. So now that ends the Q&A. We'll move on to our closing statements from each member. And we're going to start with Krista. Krista, you have 1 minute. Go ahead.
Okay, so my closing statement, I'm pushing my papers away, and this is just me. Why am I running for the Green Party? And why am I campaigning now? Where have I been? People keep saying, you're not running a real campaign. Where have I been? I've been in the community gardens. Where have I been? I've been doing outreach to people downtown. I've been trying to counsel people who've had their third overdose in the same week, that yes, they do need to go to the hospital, that they may get a bill for that ambulance ride, that they may be treated poorly. They might be arrested when they get there, but it's going to be their best chance for living. Where am I? I am in the communities and I am seeing the fact that there are children that are not learning appropriately because they've been forced into a hybrid learning model that they can't sustain. I am talking to parents and I'm working with parents who have to leave work because their kids have been sent home again, who have to try and figure out, okay, so now my kids have a class in the morning that's in the school, but they have a class in the afternoon that's at home. How do I get them in between the two places when there's no bus route in between? I'm passionate about a lot of things, including the environment, and I know we can do it. I know we can do it. Don't say not to vote green because we can't win, because we can win. Thank you.
All right, Krista, I love the enthusiasm there. Linda, your turn, go ahead.
I have long been one of the people in the community who's apathetic about politics. I had a negative taste in my mouth about politics from experience that I had with my father being in the political realm. But when I started looking at how politics affects my daily life, and I started to ask myself, how can we make a change? In order to make a change, you have to be willing to step up and put yourself in a position to make that change if you have a strong voice for the community. I feel like I have a strong voice for the community. I have worked in the community my entire life. I currently work as a criminal lawyer. I see what's going on. My office is downtown. There are so many things that are concerning to each of us. The Liberal Party has taken its time to construct a plan that is well consulted with the community to find out what people in the community need and how to establish it. I like that about the Liberal Party. I like that we are asking the people and trying to figure out what we need to do about it. We have created a plan to grow. You can read the entire platform on the website. Obviously, there's not time to go through that. And we have created a plan that will create economic dignity. I bring a unique perspective to government. It is time that we do have a voice in government that comes from an equitable background. As a Black female, there are certain things that I bring to the table that nobody else can bring. With the background that I have, there are some things I can bring to the table that is a strong voice, and I will definitely fight for the things that we need in the community. So I am asking you to vote for me June 2nd, or even today, because voting is open.
And I was on mute that whole time.
It was your turn.
You know, it had to happen right at the end. Lisa, your closing statement, go ahead.
You had a good run there, Rich. So what I'm gonna say is I got into politics for very personal reasons. As a teenager, I experienced homelessness. Just 4 years ago, I lost a brother to an overdose. I have been connected to the community, talking to people, people with lived experience. I've been downtown, down to the downtown mission many times, talking to the individuals there about how they have found themselves in the position that they are in and what supports and services are needed. I've talked to seniors across the community who are struggling to make ends meet. Many seniors in our community can barely afford to keep a roof over their head, let alone their prescription medication. Many of them are going to the shelters and food banks for food. You know, I got into this because I had young children in the education system, and I saw how young children, children across the entire spectrum were being left behind. My husband is an auto worker. I've seen how successive governments have chipped away at the auto sector here and the workers here. I've seen healthcare being chipped away by successive governments. And every step of the way, I have stood there with those workers, every single step of the way, because what I know from experience is when we invest in people on the front end, when we believe in people and we invest in them on the front end, the savings to our entire social net is much more than the original investment. And I believe that we have a lot of opportunity in our community, and we need to be doing our very best to ensure that we are lifting everyone in our community up.
Okay, Lisa, thank you. Linda, Lisa, Krista, thank you very much for joining us here today. That's it for today's Windsor West debate. Of course, candidates, thank you. The audience, thank you for the questions. And Windsor Law Center for Cities for hosting this important discussion. As I mentioned earlier, the forum is being recorded and will be available on the Windsor Law Center for Cities website and YouTube channel later today. And it will also be released as a podcast by our friends at Rose City Politics. Have a great day. And as Linda said, go vote today. But if you don't vote today, please go vote on June 2nd. Good night, everybody.